Welcome to The Jump, presented by Best Buy.
Today's opening tip! Richard, you have become a pickleball player here in the bubble.
I'm terrible at it.
I mean, you're terrible at a lot of things that aren't basketball, but how competitive are these games? Because you're out there, today you were out there with Scott Foster, and you guys have had some words on the
court. Well, look, I play in the rain, I'll play in anything. Look, when you got a week in the hole, and you only get to walk back and forth to testing, and the only physical activity that quarantine is the hole. When you only physical activity you get to see is people playing pickleball, you're like, it's either that or the gym. I'll see you guys on the court. Who wants some? I'm ready.
Oh, boy. By the way, Richard's quarantine came with Xbox, right?
Xbox, Oculus, TV. All the stuff. And yeah, I know for a fact I would not last a day in prison.
It was really rough. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. And on that note, I am joined by 2016 NBA champ Richard Jefferson and our NBA insider, senior writer Ramona Shelburne. Great to have you both on with us today. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Eastern Conference Finals. They don't resume until Wednesday. So who does the long layoff benefit more, the Heat or the Celtics? We will discuss. First, though, let's get to last night. For years, Anthony Davis was a very big boy who didn't get a chance to play at the big boy level. All that talent and size and touch and work ethic. For nearly a decade in the league, all it had added up to was the P word, potential. Maybe he could be one of the true greats of his generation, but honestly, how would we know for sure when we never got to see him pass the second round of the playoffs? Well, we learned a little bit more last night when the Lakers got themselves into quite the situation, down one in a game they had largely led with just 2.1 on the clock, and Denver looking like it was about to assert itself in these Western Conference Finals. For LA, there would only be one chance, one shot. So Rajon Rondo asked Frank Vogel if he could be the one to do the inbounds. And as Rondo stood there on the sideline, a human computer just analyzing every matchup currently on the floor, his eyes fell on AD. The two had played together in New Orleans, so Rajon knew just not how dangerous AD could be, but just how many years Davis had yearned to show it. And boy, did he, once the ball got in his hands. On the move, and wow, money. Now, for a few hours after the game, there was a lively internet debate on exactly what Mason Plumlee was doing on this play, calling for the switch when no one was screening him. But honestly, fixating on that is missing the point. Anthony Davis is a 6'10 center who, when given the chance to make the game winner 26 feet from the basket under absurd pressure, hit an absolutely beautiful, clean three. Afterward, Rondo called it the biggest shot of AD's life so far, and then added this.
You know, watching him grow, obviously I played with him a couple years back, and to where he's come now, he's always been a dominant force for any opponent he's ever played against, but see him grow and hit a shot in this type of environment, which the conference final doesn't really get any bigger than this.
It sure is big to hit this kind of shot. And watch how he celebrated. Poor Talen Horton Tucker, by the way. Hey, Rook, what can I tell you? Sometimes victory has a price.
Such a little butt down.
Woo, the whole team celebration was crazy. But AD and LeBron James in particular had such a special exchange. You know, it was LeBron who AD had gone to back in March after he missed a near-identical shot in a game against Brooklyn. That had actually turned out to be the Lakers' final game before the NBA shut down, and Davis became consumed by being that. That was how he had left things.
I mean, LeBron, I tell you, I mean, the first, what, like 4 days, I was talking to him like, damn, I should have made that shot for you. Like, I got to make that shot for you. And he was like, man, you're fine. And then I knew that I was going to have an opportunity, you know, tonight to make, you know, almost that same exact shot from the same exact spot. It's for sure the biggest shot of my career. And I just want to, you know, be able to compete for a championship. And I know that, you know, moments like this comes with it.
You know, right after AD did hit that shot last night, as he was running back to the bench, he yelled, Kobe. Just like so many kids do after they hit an imaginary big game winner in their driveways. Of course, for Davis and the Lakers, that comes with so much more weight now. They have dedicated this postseason to Kobe's memory. And last night, were even wearing their Kobe tribute black snakeskin-themed jerseys. Kobe, of course, wrote himself indelibly into the history books of the sport by coming up big in those big boy moments. Now, finally, Anthony Davis has the chance to try following in his footsteps. And so far, he is making the most of it.
Richard, what did you see as the significance of that shot?
Well, I was always told and taught very young, there are players that don't want those shots. Mm-hmm. There are players that want those shots, and there are players that can make those shots. Though there are three different types of players. And so you watch Anthony Davis, and I remember I was at that game. I was doing the Brooklyn Laker game. And even Kevin Durant's face was just like, oh, he's going to make this. So to get that exact same shot in the exact same spot at a much higher level shows you that he's mentally starting to figure it out. He doesn't let past failures, you know, mess with him. He's like, I'm going to have another opportunity. And when I get that second opportunity, I'm going to knock it down. So I don't want to say without that failure in the Nets game, would he have been successful here? No, but his thought process starts to change of like, yo, I'm going to be in these moments. Start to slow your heart rate down. Start to slow your breathing down. Start to zero in. Start to focus. And so I think in that moment, we started to see the growth of Anthony Davis.
Look, it's all about muscle memory, right? You make that shot once and you have that memory in your muscles and in your brain and your heart that you can do it again. And I think even just, I know we don't want to dissect what happened on the defensive end
where
Mason Plumlee runs into LeBron and Jeremy Grant is looking at it like, should I switch? Should I not? But it's so metaphoric for exactly what just happened for the Lakers and for Anthony Davis and LeBron James and their relationship. LeBron James didn't do anything. He's just standing there. He didn't set a pick. He didn't make a move to make a shot. But he's so important to what the Lakers do, and they're so focused on LeBron James, they forgot Anthony Davis is out there about to hit the game-winning shot. And I think that's a reminder, and it was a huge confidence boost to Anthony Davis. Like, this, LeBron might be the point guard. He might have finished second in the MVP voting, but you are the future of this team. And they're not going to win by just LeBron carrying them there. LeBron has to teach Anthony Davis how to win, and I think that was a big lesson last night. And now he feels that. Now he knows that next time that shot comes up.
Yeah, and look, Ramona mentioned it, the defensive breakdown. Richard, I know you've been itching to talk about this. Please discuss what happened defensively for the Nuggets there.
Well, look, everybody's talking about Mason Plumlee, but when coaches draw up plays, they draw them up a lot of times to cause confusion. And so when you watch Mason Plumlee in that spot, you see him pointing to Grant very, very early. Because if Mason Plumlee tries to go underneath the screen, he's got to sprint to underneath Brown. Jeremy Grant could get the steal. If you look at this, if Jeremy Grant, and what they say to basketball all the time, if there is no screen, then there is no defensive scheme. So no screen, no scheme. So if Jeremy Grant would have ran out at that moment, he would have had a steal. But you see these guys communicating. He's like, we're going to switch everything. But he can't switch at the level or else Bron gets to drive down for a layup and a back cut. That's why Rondo wants it. So he's got to go underneath. And look, at the end of the day, he hit this over a 6'11" person, and it was contested with a coach right behind you in front of the Nuggets bench. So I don't want to hear any of this, what was Mason Plumlee doing? Mason Plumlee ideally was doing what he is supposed to do in that moment. That means go underneath. Now, the other part about it is if he doesn't switch, then all of a sudden you have Bron. That's why coaches draw up those plays to cause confusion, and it was a great one.
Ramona, I was talking before about just Anthony Davis wanting these moments so badly. He said this was the biggest shot of his life. Where do you think it ranks for you in terms of what you've seen him do?
I think for him, because of the stage, because he wanted to be there. And let's go back to them wearing their Kobe jerseys. You know, I'm always thinking about Kobe talking about, you know, who was going to be the next standard bearer of this franchise, right? They would always go pursue free agents, whether it was Dwight Howard or Carmelo Anthony, and they wouldn't get him. And Kobe's response was always the same, is we shouldn't have to recruit you to the Lakers. The guy who's going to be at the face of the Lakers is going to want to be here. I shouldn't have to even pitch you. I shouldn't have to explain it to you. You have to want to be here, and you have to want to be in those moments. LeBron James wanted that moment. Anthony Davis wanted that moment. They wanted to be there. And Kobe's right. You know, like, the person who takes on face of the franchise for the Lakers, he's got to want to be that and everything that comes with
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. All right, coming up, we're going to switch to the other side of the bracket. The Celtics taking Game 3 of the Eastern Conference Finals on Saturday. What was the difference for them? We will discuss that. First, though, the latest edition of Jump at the Symphony with the maestro, Anthony Davis.
Seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. has won it for the Lakers.
The Jump is presented by Best Buy. If you can't be there, feel there. Bring the game home when you upgrade to a big Sony TV today.
It's a make or miss league.
It's a make or make.
It's a make or miss league.
All that, and he knows about wine too. Make Billy Hoyle, Alex Caruso getting the lead pass.
Look at that pass.
Exit pass, Jeremy Grant. Ramona, which is the better nickname for him, the Caruso or the Bald Eagle?
I mean, I gotta go with Caruso.
Thank you.
So fun to say. Yeah, it's so good.
Billy Hoyle, that is the best nickname. We opened it up with Billy Hoyle. Do you understand that is like one of the most awesome basketball names in the culture? Stay with Billy Hoyle.
You're going to have a lot more chances to debate this over the coming weeks, yes. Is my theory. All right, miss layups. LeBron meeting Jamal Murray at the rim. Watch this. Woo.
Ooh.
Then LeBron gets in transition. Ooh. Torrey Craig, he gets the LeBron, the chase down.
There we go. Everybody hustling out there. Everybody working. But look, that's like a big dude picking on a little dude. The other one, Jeremy Grant, is on the same athleticism plane as Bron,
right.
So that's a little bit more fair. Bron out here picking on young Canadian kids. That's not cool, man.
Canadians are people too, Richard. They have just as much a right to grow up and be basketball players as you did.
You're welcome.
Make bags. Speaking of Jamal Murray, he was in his several nice finishes last night. Is this layup, no, not the ball handling, is the layup package Kyrie-esque, or would you not even go that far?
I would go that far, because that 360 filet layup he made the round before, maybe it was in the Utah series, that is up there. Now, again, Kyrie does it 5 times a night.
Right.
But yes, that
and
is
18
the,
other things in between.
18 other things, but that's the evolution of basketball.
Yeah.
These younger players see this stuff and they start to emulate it, but look at that. That is, look at all in one hand, bringing round. Whew. Never had that.
You can wear it in pickleball. You can
oh,
get it.
Yeah, no, I don't pickleball. Have any skill set there either, to tell you the truth.
I know that looks good at home, Ramona. Woo. All right, miss intensity. Speaking of layups, here is a bunch of missed ones and lots of sloppy basketball, so we had to give it the yakety sacks treatment. Ramona, what is going on here?
Well, look, you know, I just think you have a lot of sloppy basketball, but you, in
we put it in black and white so it wouldn't be your eyes would not have
my eyes. We've all been there.
Much.
Oh, is there more? Bring another one? Oh, jeez.
It wasn't good.
Hey.
There. All right, make transition. Celtics were up 4 with 2.5 minutes left in the half, and they turned the energy way up. Good defense and transition buckets, finishing the half up 13. Richard, why is that so important to close quarters like that, especially in the playoffs?
Well, because a lot of times you either do all of your work and early, and then you're not able to finish it off, or you've been battling, and then that last 2 minute you get into a stretch, and then you're able to get some rest during that timeout so you can actually continue that stretch.
Yep. Closing quarters, closing quarters, closing quarters. Say it all the time. All right, guys, let's stick with the Eastern Conference Finals. The Celtics getting themselves back into the series against the Heat with a victory on Saturday. Boston said its response is proof that there is more than enough resolve within this team to turn the entire series around and win it. So, Richard, what do you think was the difference in Game 3?
I'm going to say this. It was Gordon Hayward. Right? Just having him on the court. Now, he didn't have this amazing game. It wasn't over the top. But having a guy that grew up in the Brad Stevens system, you don't call a lot of isolation plays. So he will get the ball. He will cut. He will move. He's also 6'8". So he makes defensive plays. He can rebound in traffic. There's a lot of things that he can do. But Gordon Hayward is such an unselfish player. And then I don't want to say that he is the focal point, but he averaged 17 points a game. That's nothing to scoff about. Everyone's talking about what the Lakers are missing with Avery Bradley. Well, this man averaged even more. And they don't have two studs like LeBron and AD. So having Gordon Hayward on the court just, I felt like, opened things up for them and gave them a jolt of energy.
Well, I think what Gordon does, too, is he plays really good fundamental basketball where when you just need to break that Miami mm-hmm. zone, he knows what to do. Like, he was a great cutter to the middle of the zone when they need to do that. In game two, when he wasn't out there, I thought they didn't really cut in there. They would sort of drift and didn't look like they were exact. You know, when you go back in high school, and you're how do you break a zone? Gordon Hayward was just executing that perfectly, and I think that really helped them out. But the other thing, too, is Marcus Smart on Goran Dragic in a lot of those moments really got the heat out of what I think they like to do. And part of that was early on they got Duncan Robinson in foul trouble. You know, Marcus Smart had been on him a little bit, and so by getting him out of the game, you're able to put Marcus on Dragic. I mean, they just did a lot of things well in game three that I think if they can continue doing that, we have ourselves a series.
No, Ramona, you make a great point. Like, he's been, when we talk about he played for Brad Stevens, he knows Brad Stevens' zone offense because he ran it in college. And then that was part of the reason why he signed with Boston is because of familiarity with Brad Stevens. And that's one of the things that's so amazing with this group. He averaged 17 points a game. I'm going to keep saying that because if there was any team in the playoff right now that got a 17-point-a-game scorer, they would be ecstatic. It would shift things in the series as long as they're able to integrate him the right way, and I think they did a good job of doing that in game two.
Brad Stevens told me that Gordon is just the stabilizer, that just he has so much assurance, that veteran experience of what to do when, and you saw it in that game. All right, let's talk about the other side, though, because after the Heat lost that game, Jimmy Butler said, quote, I think it gets old playing from behind consistently, especially against a great team like Boston and what they bring to the table. So, Ramona, this is a real pivotal moment for them. Either the Heat can go up 3-1 and sort of keep their grip on this series, or we could be all at 2-2 in just a couple of days. How do they avoid that?
Well, you know, Eric Spoelstra keeps talking about the Celtics are doing a great job of flattening us out on offense, right? And so I think what he means by that is when their defense just collapses, right? When they want to drive, they collapse. One thing that's been very effective for Miami is when they can get Bam Adebayo going downhill, right? When you're not just relying on Goran to create everything and do his Manu Ginobili imitation up there, and you can get Jimmy going downhill, that really opens things up because, you know, the Miami Heat obviously is a great three-point shooting team, but when you have a night where your best sniper, Duncan Robinson is a starter out there, gets into early foul trouble, that changes the dynamics out there a little bit. So I think if they can just get Bam going downhill, Jimmy going downhill a little bit, where the Celtics aren't able to flatten them out, they can be on par offensively in places they want to be.
Yeah, no, Ramona, it's great. It's great to have that resolve. It's great to have that resiliency. Like 100%, you want to have that team that's not just front runners. That means that when they get down, they're able to fight back. And they've been winning some of these games decisively. It wasn't like they just winning by one. It's like they've been down 10 and won by 10. But ultimately, that does exert a lot of energy. Now, that energy, it doesn't come back to haunt you because you're not having to travel. You're not having to go on the home court or somebody else's home court. There's a lot of constants here that I think that's part of the reason why we've seen so many great comebacks. But Jimmy Butler's right. You don't want to keep getting down because every time you move forward, every game, these things matter more, and you start to lose that margin of error. The same thing happened with the Nuggets coming back from double digits. And all of a sudden, you had one game, one shot to win. But it was like if you would have played consistent basketball in the first three quarters, maybe it wouldn't have led to that. And I think that's what kind of Jimmy Butler is talking about, those first portions of the game where they need to be playing better basketball, not just the last like 10 minutes.
And if you have this list that we're looking at right now, you cannot help it. Mentally, you use it a little bit as a crutch, right? You start to think like, oh, we're down, but we'll come back. Don't worry about it. We can depend on that. This is how we do, like all of that stuff. Unfortunately, it is very hard to come back from a double-digit deficit against an excellent Final Four team, and that's what the Heat are doing. You mentioned it earlier in the segment also, Ramona, about foul trouble. I do think that is going to be another key for them to not get into this situation again. Duncan Robinson specifically, as you noted, Tyler Hero, these guys have to be out on the court in that key stretch in the third and fourth quarter. All right, guys, here's what The Jump recommends for today. Baxter Holmes has a piece up on the ESPN app about Jaylen Brown being a player for this moment. Baxter discusses Jaylen's educational background and all the steps along the way that prepared him to be a leader for this current intersection of race and sports. Really good story. Check that out. And coming up next on this show, LeBron James sounding off about the MVP voting results over the weekend. Does he have a point? Ooh. Stick around. You're watching The Jump.
rise above and hit our doors.
Welcome back to The Jump, presented by Best Buy.
Pissed me off. That's my true answer. It pissed me off because out of 101 votes, I got 16 first place votes. That's what pissed me off more than anything. You know, not saying that the winner wasn't deserving of the MVP, but that pissed me off. And I finished second a lot in my career, either from a championship and now four times as the MVP.
It's just a weird thing sometimes that I don't know how much we are really watching the game of basketball, or are we just in the narration mode, the narrative. I mean, I'm fine. Don't get it twisted. Like, I'm going back to my room, I'm perfectly fine. Like, I was pissed off at the reaction earlier when I saw it. I'm absolutely great now. I'm going back to my room, drink some wine, and sleep very well tonight. So let's not get it twisted. I'm great.
Don't get it twisted. He's got the wine. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still here with Ramona Shelburne, Richard Jefferson. Those were LeBron's remarks after finding out he was runner-up to Giannis for MVP this season. It was the fourth time in his 17-year career he has finished up as runner-up, tied with Jerry West and Larry Bird for most all-time. So, Ramona, you voted for LeBron James. Does he have a point about awards voting?
Yeah, he does. And look, I'm one of the 16, okay? And last time we talked about this, I made the mistake that my friend Tony Reale on Around the Horn always mutes me for, right? He docks me points on Around the Horn when I use the word narrative, okay? And I think LeBron's using the word narrative wrong.
I was gonna say,
here
he's
too,
the narrative, right? Isn't he the narrative in this situation?
He's the narrative, right? He's the narrative. He's the one with the story. Giannis is actually not the narrative. Giannis is the statistical winner. By every statistical measure, Giannis should have won. Giannis was the best player, the most valuable, all of that. If you want to get into that, I look at the totality of LeBron's contributions this year. I gave him points for leadership. I give him credit for taking a team that had been out of the playoffs for 6 years to the number one seed in the Western Conference, for integrating with Anthony Davis. Those seem to be big. That takes a lot. And that's why I voted for LeBron. He led the league in assists at age 35, played a new position at point guard. Giannis, to me, had a spectacular season. I voted for him last year. This is not personal, but let's talk a little bit about the broader scheme of awards voting.
Oh, yes.
There
Can
are
we?
A lot of awards voters. Yeah, okay? There are a lot of voters. There are over 100 people who vote for MVP. And I knew when I voted for LeBron that I was going to be in the majority this year. Sorry, in the minority this year. Of course, everybody had written their columns. It was talked about openly. You knew that if you were going to vote for LeBron, you were going to be in the minority. And so you knew you would have to defend your vote. I think there is some pressure not to there is some pressure to just kind of go along with what everybody else is going to vote for. So he does have a point there. I agree with him on that, that there is some pressure to just vote for whoever. You know, you read Zach Lowe's column, or you read, John Hollinger's column, or you read whoever's column that you read, and maybe you read 10 of them. You study your own numbers, whatever you do to do your voting. But that's why there are 100-something voters, okay? 101 voters, right? The NBA does this on purpose. There's radio broadcasters, there's analysts, there's former players, there's beat writers, there's columnists, because we all have differences of opinion, and collectively, you will come out with who should win the award. Now, I do think he has a point that there is pressure to go along with the herd. I do think that he has a valid point there.
Now, I understand everything that everybody is saying. And I feel bad because it's kind of like when you have those MJ versus LeBron conversations, because it's like, well, by saying one is better, it's like you're trying to demean the other. We're not trying to say that Giannis didn't have an amazing season. That's not the conversation. We're not trying to say, and most people would say, look, Giannis would be second at worst. But ultimately, Giannis might not care about these things now, but when Giannis is 31 years old and he's having seasons that are just as good as the one he's having, but because there's somebody newer and younger and shinier coming along, and that person had a historic season, now all of a sudden his accomplishments at a much later age, and that should have, in my opinion, that should be accounted for. When you're doing things at an age that have never been done, when you're doing things in your career that have never been done, that was one thing that somebody pointed out to me that I never took into place. LeBron James literally led the NBA in assists for the first time in his career, and he's at 17 years. Why? Because his team needed him to do that, right? And that was something that was magnificent. When you look at Giannis, he was great, but all he did was just consistently improve on what he did last year. Not necessarily added something to his game. He didn't. His free throw percentage mm-hmm. didn't go up. His three-pointer was not effective, especially we saw that late game. So I understand why everyone's frustrated. I understand why Bron is frustrated. I understand why Giannis fans are like, what are you talking about? It's just weird the way we're going about this, and there needs to be an adjustment in it, because Giannis had a great statistical season, but I don't know if he was the best player in basketball last year.
He was. I mean, that is, of course, what poor Ramona has now heard me say for five straight years. That is the question, right? Yeah. That is the point. That is the inflection point we're at. And frankly, it is even more of an issue now than it was when I started talking about this 5 years ago, because with every year, the statistical pressure of all of that has gotten so great because we have more statistics. Mm-hmm. We have more access to games, actually. When I started covering the NBA, mm-hmm. you got a game of the week on national television, and that was kind of it. And people saw Michael Jordan a million times and all of that. Now we have access to all the tape of every single game, every stat imaginable. And you're talking about, Richard, LeBron's context of, he did this in this season, or Giannis didn't add this to last season. Again, right now, that is not what they tell you to vote on. And they don't give you the most clear instructions, but they do say it's supposed to be on this particular regular season. Not in comparison to his previous seasons, not about what he might do in the playoffs, not about who is the best player. It is about what a guy did with the stats for this season. And I have said over and over again, I think it is a mistake, as we have gone through the last 3.5 decades without modernizing the major awards in this league, to not have a distinction between who had the most outstanding statistical season, however you want to put it, best season, most outstanding season, this season, versus who is the best player in the NBA. And I think that is a lot of what LeBron James was frustrated with, right? I'm the best player in the NBA still. But that's not what the award is for right now.
I'll go back to
crazy.
This. Shaquille O'Neal was the most dominant man on the planet for like 10 to 12 seasons. Yeah. Most dominant man. It wasn't even close. And I believe he has 2 MVPs. And I feel like that part is something that, again, who is the best player in the league versus who is having the best statistical seasons.
Well, and here's, by the way, Kobe and LeBron were the flip-flop of this back in, I think, 2009. Ramona, you're going to be no chapter and verse on this, that Kobe yep. was considered the best player in the NBA in 2009. Mm-hmm. LeBron won the award because he had the best stats that season. Uh-huh. So he has been the beneficiary of this conundrum, and now it is working against him. And I would just, again, urge the NBA to consider modernizing the awards so that we can make a distinction between who had the best season versus, who do we think is the best player in the NBA this year? And by the way, that can change from year to year, because if we had those two awards, I would have given best player in the NBA this year, last season, to Kevin Durant, right? He's the best player in the league this season, last year. Mm-hmm. This year, I would give that to LeBron James, hands down. But the best statistical season went to Giannis. I just, again, think that there can be a differentiation. All right. Before we go to break, I do want to address something from this past weekend. So I talk sometimes about the women of the NBA, and often someone will try to correct me and say, you mean the WNBA? And I'll say, no, I mean the NBA. Yes, what you see on your TV when you watch the NBA is men playing basketball. But in every corner of the sport, there are women, all through the league office, team front offices, training staffs, coaching staffs, and none of them, me included, would be able to do the jobs we do the way we do them if it wasn't for Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Honestly, if you are an American woman who appreciates not having to ask your father or husband for permission to manage your own finances, property, health, you owe a gigantic debt to the notorious RBG. something the WNBA recognized with a lovely video tribute before its playoff game last night. So it was surprising then, and disappointing, frankly, when the NBA chose not to do the same. Despite that it was just last month the league held such meaningful moments of silence for not just politician and civil rights icon John Lewis, but actor Chadwick Boseman. If you are a league that holds equality as a core value, and I know for sure that this league does, the icons of that equality can't just be those who helped the men that we all see on TV, but those who paved the way for the women who work right alongside them. After all, the NBA is significantly stronger because of all the women who work in and around it. And we are all significantly stronger because a young lawyer dedicated her life to allowing us to have those opportunities. So thank you, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I don't know how much basketball you watched, but I know you had a hand in making our game better. And I know you will be missed.
.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers!
What they brought me here for? Make big-time plays? As part of the legacy, I want those shots. I want the big-time plays.
Drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot.
Let's look back on Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals from the Nuggets' perspective. The comeback kids almost pulled it off again. This time Denver was down as many as 16 in the third quarter and lost right in the final 3 seconds, such dramatic fashion. Richard, do you see a silver lining for your old team for their play last night?
I do see a little bit of a silver lining, mainly from the standpoint of they're building confidence, right? They got to build confidence, and they know that they can come back against the Clippers. They proved that they could come back this whole postseason. So here they were down 16. They had the lead. They had a one-point lead with 2 seconds to go. Lakers had no timeouts, and Anthony Davis hit a historic shot. So if you're the Denver Nuggets, it's like, hey, we're down 2-0. We've been here before, but we're gaining confidence, and we're playing better.
Ramona, what do you think?
Look, I think after game one, they walked out of there saying, you know, all our stars got in foul trouble. They never really got going. The big shot, you know, Jokic having 2 assists in game one, that you can write that game off. Game two, the Nuggets were right there. And I know that we're down at the end there, but they really started getting Jokic going. And when Jokic gets going, he starts dishing out assists. Jamal Murray gets going. I mean, Jamal, they found something there in game two, especially towards the end of game two, that I think they take with them throughout the series. And plus, look, they've been down 3-1 before several times. Like, this is nothing new for
them.
They
have, but I would say this couple of things. And I agree with you, by the way, both of you guys, that they did find some silver lining here. But a few things. We thought the Clippers were going to be this crazy hard second-round opponent for them. They were not, right? The Clippers didn't lose that series by putting up some incredible, great effort, and it was best against best, and the Nuggets beat them. The Clippers did not play the way anyone, including themselves, expected them to, and the Nuggets were able to come in. So they have not, and playing the Utah Jazz, too, in the first round, they have not faced a team that is running on all cylinders like the Lakers. So I just think, kind of like the Miami Heat and Jimmy Butler were talking about, you cannot count on, hey, we'll come back from a 3-1 deficit. Hey, we'll come back from double-digit leads. This is a team playing at a different level than anyone they have faced in the previous two rounds. And I would also just say, and I know, Richard, you want to jump in here, but I would say you got to stop talking about the fouls. You just got to.
I don't think that was officiating. It was just merely a fact that they got into foul trouble and they didn't get those minutes. The only thing I would say this.
Yes.
When we talk about the Clippers hitting on all cylinders, they were up 3-1. That's a lot of cylinders. Maybe not all, but that's most of your cylinders.
Are you really going to tell me that that last round, Nuggets-Clippers, was great team against great team, executing both at their highest level, and just the Nuggets were the ones who won? Because what I saw.
Oh, God, no, I would
not
say that.
That is just not what I saw.
I was standing right there during the fourth quarter, and that is not what I saw in Game 7.
Yeah, so my point is they are playing against a team now that is executing on all cylinders. Lakers, and I just don't think you can count on. Don't worry, we can get in a 3-1 hole and we'll be fine. That's not going to happen.
I'm counting
against
on that.
A team that's playing. Richard picked the Nuggets in 7. Okay, up next, we will discuss which Eastern Conference finalists will benefit more from the 3-day layoff that we're in the middle of between games 3 and 4. Stick around to find out. You are watching The Jump. They said don't get your hopes high, but I got high hopes, God wrote it in my DNA.
The Jump is presented by Best Buy. If you can't be there, feel there. Bring the game home when you upgrade to a big Sony TV today.
The WNBA playoffs roll on tomorrow with the best of 5 semifinals. The Suns square off against MVP Asia Wilson and the top-seeded Aces. That's at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific. And then the Lynx taking on Breonna Stewart and the Storm. Both games on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. And we will have game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Celtics and Heat Wednesday night, 8:30 Eastern. I'll be on the sidelines for that one. The Heat lead the series 2-1. NBA Countdown is going to get our coverage started at 7:30 on ESPN Deportes and the app. And right here on The Jump, it's crunch time. Michael Jordan just keeps on winning. On Saturday, ESPN's The Last Dance won an Emmy for Outstanding Documentary or Nonfiction Series, beating out Tiger King. Congrats to Libby Geist. Ooh, and the whole crew.
That's a big win.
At ESPN.
You beat Tiger King?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those were actually the two biggest things during quarantine. But the fact that you could, Tiger King, that's the people were like scoffing at, oh, it's going to win. Mm-hmm. That was no easy feat, because Tiger King, that was some interesting.
What was your
stuff.
Favorite Last Dance moment?
Oh, that's great. That's my favorite part about Tiger King. Carole Baskin definitely did it. That's 100%.
Wow.
Favorite part about it was Michael Jordan saying, without Scottie Pippen, there is no Michael Jordan.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Producer Steve wants me to throw an allegedly at you. Allegedly, Carole Baskin did it. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
I agree
allegedly.
On the Scottie thing,
allegedly.
Although the security guard doing the shrug was
that,
my...
Yes.
That was amazing.
It was amazing.
Let's talk about Golden Auctions, because they sold the one-of-one Giannis rookie card on Sunday for $1.8 million. That is a record for a basketball card. In 2014, someone that bought the card for $7,000 and returned the card back to its eBay seller after buying it because it had a yellow stain on it. Now, it goes for 1.8. Ramona, how big of a regret do you think that the buyer had for returning the card back in 2014?
Oh my gosh. I mean, shoot, first, I didn't know that like cards were such a
They're
big deal
back,
right now.
Ramona.
I'm gonna go out to my garage and go dig up my baseball cards.
I'd rather have a
I have some
to
old basketball
cards.
I mean
than that. I really would.
There are days I feel like we do have a ticket to the Titanic in 2020, but it's a different scenario. Ramona, I want to get to this Raptors issue. Masai Ujiri said in a news conference last week he has yet to engage with Toronto ownership on a contract extension. His current deal, it does end in 2021. It's not like it ends tomorrow. Still, though, it is an issue. Last week, the Raptors extended head coach Nick Nurse's contract. So how much of a priority is it for the Raptors, Ramona, to extend Masai this offseason?
Okay, Masai Ujiri can get an extension anytime he
Pick
wants.
Up the phone.
He is the LeBron James of basketball executives right now. He doesn't have to sign an exec. He doesn't have to do that. He can keep his leverage. He can keep his flexibility. And over the last couple of years, there have been some intriguing jobs that have come up where his name has been linked to them, and he hasn't necessarily moved into any of those jobs, right? Obviously, the Washington job with the Wizards
the
and the
job.
Knicks job when that came open. None of those ever got to the part where he ever officially talked to them or could talk to them because he was under contract. So why sign an extension? Why not keep your options open? If I'm Toronto, I want him to sign an extension because I don't want him ever talking to anybody else. But if you're Masai, keep your leverage.
Look, Masai is the master of this. Part of the reason, like, he didn't sign his extension with Denver, and that was what opened up the door for him to get the job in Toronto. Now, there was, like, a handshake agreement. It was like, hey, yeah, we're going to bring you back. We're going to work out the deal. And then he was like, hey, can I go talk to Toronto? And letting him go talk to Toronto, they offered him a boatload. Denver's more of a small market, very conservative with how they handle management. But Masai's going to do what Masai wants. He has the golden ticket. It does.
He printed the golden ticket. He didn't have the golden ticket. He made it.
He has the golden ticket in his possession. I'd rather have Masai's golden ticket than that Giannis rookie card we just saw for $1.8 million. Because Masai is going to get a lot more money than that. So
true.
He can take his time. He's literally one of the most respected guys in the history of that position right now.
No, I think he's kind of at the point where if he did want to move to another franchise, he could almost, not every team, but there is a lot of teams, kind of like LeBron James. If he pointed to your team, even if you didn't have room,
they'd make room for him.
I kind of think Masai is at the point where not every team, but for a lot of teams, if he said, you know what, I'd actually like to come here, they would make that room for him. All right, I do want to shift to the Eastern Conference Finals before we go here. Celtics Heat doesn't pick back up again until Wednesday for Game 4. That means both teams have 3 full days off to recover. Such a big difference from playing every other day as they have been through most of the postseason. So who does that long layoff benefit more, Richard, the Celtics or the Heat?
It benefits the Boston Celtics because you get more practice time with Gordon Hayward. He's able to kind of reintegrate himself into their system and what they're doing and just kind of get himself back into that rhythm. Not that he wasn't practicing or working out, but they can run over schemes, they can ask questions, they can get that. So I think that benefits the Celtics.
Yeah, I think it benefits the Celtics. I mean, Rachel, you had a great report on Gordon and his wife. They're about to have their fourth kid. Did she have it?
Not as of right now, as I know, although I am not, as you know, in the hospital. Okay. So I don't... Can't say for sure.
I mean, he obviously was dealing with some real life stuff as well. He had had some time at home while he was rehabbing from the ankle, so he decided to stay in the bubble and play as opposed to go home for the birth of his child. Obviously, the guy's been through a lot, and he said after the game, like, I haven't been this tired in a long time, but they needed him. And so this just gives him some time to get his legs under him because he's been dealing with a lot.
I do think it helps him. There's no doubt, right? And he actually, if you saw before halftime, actually asked out of the game. He was so tired at one point. Yeah. And by the way, they haven't had him in the bubble to do walkthroughs and all of that, Richard, because he came back and went into quarantine and then pretty much got thrown into this situation. So it's been very limited, their time with him. But I will say, I think this 3-day layoff will benefit the Heat tremendously. Those guys are tired. They have been coming back from those huge deficits. You could see it on the court. And here's something interesting. There were a couple times in that fourth quarter that I saw almost every key member of the Heat with his hands on his knees. And that is very unusual for Miami. In fact, in Miami, they have a little saying for it. When they see other teams do that in the fourth quarter and they think about how good their conditioning program is, they're like, oh, they're cracking. The other team's cracking. That's what they say to each other when they see the hands on the knees. Well, guess what? They had their hands on their knees a couple times during that fourth quarter. So I am interested to see what these 3 days do for them. And also just the strategy. Obviously, Boston threw new things at their zone that they hadn't done before. Gordon Hayward is now in there. So I think those 3 days will help them as well. We will see. Ramona, thank you so much for joining us. Richard is going to be with me the rest of the way here. The jump returns tomorrow. We'll see you.